Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us Click and Clack the Tappan Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the Ale Shaozu Department here at Car Talk Plaza.
Huh? What are you talking about? Ale Shao what?
All right. I'll get to that in a minute. But first, I have to share with you a little story that was published in the German news weekly Der Spiegel.
Is that like Der Beagle?
No, that's a dog. This is a magazine. But listen to this story.
Okay.
Well, here it is.
I'm ready.
Police in the southwestern German city of Kaiserslautern say two men trying to barbecue bratwurst on their porch barbecued more than they bargained for. The men, enjoying a warm spring evening with their wives, couldn't seem to get the charcoal in their grill to light using lighter fluid. So the 37-year-old host had an idea.
Hey, guys, watch this moment?
You got it exactly, man. He decided to pour a glass of gasoline on the smoldering charcoal.
Of course.
Yeah. Well, as he started to dribble the gasoline onto the coal, it ignited immediately. And the resulting shooting flame made him drop the rest of the glass of gasoline into the fire. Don't laugh.
I'm sorry.
That sent the flames ever higher, which in turn startled his 28-year-old friend, who was standing nearby holding, you ready what he's holding?
Yeah, I know what he's holding.
The gas can.
Right.
You guessed it. He dropped the gas can, burning liquid went streaming off the porch onto the host car, which burst into flame.
Mon Dieu! It's like deja vu for me, man.
The fire then engulfed his wife's car, which parked next to it, and then another car parked nearby, before the fire department managed to extinguish the various blazes. But the total damage from the barbecue, $46,000.
Right, well, that's not including the bratwurst.
Right.
So look, getting back to my original question, what was the Ale Shaozu thing you were talking about? What's that?
Oh, that's German for, hey guys, watch this.
Really?
Yeah, it really is.
Ah, stupidity, the universal language. All right, look, if you've got a stupid question about your car or not how to barbecue your bratwurst, give us a call at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi there. This is Cameron.
Cameron with a C?
Yes.
I'm just checking.
C-A-M?
E-R-O-N.
Just like Cameron Diaz.
Yes, excellent.
And where are you from, Cameron?
I'm calling from Noank, Connecticut.
From where?
Noank. It's right next to Mystic.
And how do you spell that?
N-O-A-N-K.
Noank, just like it sounds.
Exactly.
Noank.
Noank.
Right, got it.
They've got clever bumper stickers here, too.
Okay, so what's up with your car in Noank, Cameron?
I have a 2000 Jetta. Volkswagen Jetta, and every time I start it, right after, you know, as the ignition is sort of turning over and the car is about to start, It makes this horrible noise. You know a handheld electric drill?
Yes.
Okay, exactly. If you were to put that, let's say, like, into a pillow to muffle it.
Ah. So first it goes,
so it sounds good. Normal.
Yeah, it's more like,
oh, so let me get this right. Does it ever sound normal?
Everything sounds normal until the noise.
Yeah.
And how long is there normalcy? How many seconds?
3 seconds.
During which time you're still holding the key to the crank position?
Yes.
Right.
But it's just about to be. That sound when you try to turn on a car that's already on.
Yeah.
It's not that sound, but it's.
No.
I think it's akin to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But okay.
So it makes this sound.
Yes.
And then when you release the key, the noise goes away entirely.
Yes.
Never to return again until the next morning?
Until the next time.
Car starts?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Everything else is fine.
And you forget about it until tomorrow.
Exactly.
So how many years has it been making this noise? The car's 8 years old. How many years has this been going on?
I would say maybe anywhere between 3 to 8 months.
3 to 8 months.
So every day you get out and you turn the key, it goes...
Yes.
And you say,
horrible.
Oh, well, what the heck?
So finally you couldn't take it anymore. It's exactly. It's gotten to the boiling point.
Exactly.
And what do?
Look at me.
You call us. Expecting we're going to tell you to do something that's going to make it go away.
Yes.
And we are.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we're going to tell you to go to the repair shop and have them replace the starter motor.
Starter motor.
Well, I think the starter motor is likely to be at fault. And the part that I think is faulty is the piece called the starter drive.
Starter drive.
And what it is basically is a device called an overrunning clutch, which allows the gear that's attached to the starter to kind of spin away when the engine has finally started and running, because the engine is going to run a lot faster than that gear would ever want to turn, so that you don't damage the starter motor bearings and whatnot. It spins this gear freely, and then retracts when you take your key from the crank position and return it to the start position. So I think either your starter drive is on the way out, or the starter is falling out.
Oh, God. Like, really, literally falling out?
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, the bolts could be. The bolts could be loose. Yeah. But I would have thought in 8 months something awful would have happened.
Maybe a little less.
It would have fallen off already, so the bolts are probably fine.
So good.
This is not expensive. This is $325.
Yeah, and 18 cents, I think.
And 18 cents.
Yeah. But you need to do it. I think, maybe not. I mean, what is to be learned by replacing it now?
Well, assuming that these bolts are loose.
Well, here's what I would do. I would take it someplace and have them verify the diagnosis.
Okay.
So, but once you get the diagnosis, I think you owe it to the rest of humanity, Cameron, to drive this as long as it'll take you.
Sure.
Eventually, it'll break. And when it breaks, we'll know for the next caller.
How long they can
last.
Yeah, we know that 8 months is nothing.
Right. 8 months you did standing on your head, so to speak.
The only trouble is when it really goes, the car won't start. But what do you care?
You'll know. You'll get a warning. Okay. But at least we'll have some kind of a range now for how long these things can go on a Jetta.
See. Okay. I can be the guinea pig.
Yeah, I mean, the rest of the country's counting on you. See you, Cameron.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks for your call.
Good luck.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Bill from Sanford, Maine.
Hey, Bill, what's going on?
I've got a 95 Ford Probe GT.
Uh-huh.
Actually, I have three of them, and two of them are for my sons. And this one has had a long-term problem. We got it running and idling well by messing around with a few things. But now when you nail the car, it just sounds like it's a smoker. It goes, cool, and then it goes... And if you accelerate slowly, it's okay. But as soon as you nail it, it just, like, coughs and then comes back and recovers.
Uh-huh. Is it jerking or is it just not accelerating well?
It just doesn't accelerate well. It just, like, coughs, almost dies, and then you got to let up on the gas a little bit, allow it to recover, and then you can cruise okay with it. And it's not on the road yet, but we're fixing it to get on the road.
Uh-huh.
Are either the other two on the road?
I don't want to make a long story
longer. Oh, no, go ahead. We know it's hopeless, a lost cause.
The other two, I had one. I absolutely love the car. I've had it for about 4 years, and this is another problem. I parked it after work next morning, and it ran beautifully. Next morning, I get in it, I crank it, no spark, no fuel. I've been playing around with that one for 3 days, but I decided to give you my son's problem first.
Well, the good news is you have one car that... Is your goal here to have one car that works out of the three, or would you like to have all three work?
All three. The two of them, I have twin boys.
Well, how old are they? Six? Because
they're 17.
Uh-oh. You're under the gun.
You got to get right on this.
I know. I've already been through driver training.
Uh-oh.
I have no more fingernails.
I mean, it certainly could be a lot of things. It could be something as simple as a clogged fuel filter, a weak fuel pump. It could be weak spark. I mean, there are lots of things.
What have you done to this car?
Well,
because we figure you've did it, whatever it is.
Yes.
Right.
So tell us what you did.
Well, at least I got it running. I had a wiring problem, and I got it running. But then I checked the codes, which are flashing lights that you have to encode.
Yeah.
And one was a crank sensor, one was a throttle position sensor, and the other one was a VRIS, variable intake solenoid.
Okay.
I changed them all three, got rid of the codes, and after I did that, it idles fine. They're not ready to drive it on the road yet, so it's not so urgent. But around the corner, they will be. And I'm trying to get rid of this last problem.
Yeah, well, they'll be able to drive this one. What about the other two that you're going to disable in order to get this one to run? Because you're going to have to steal parts.
I mean,
the first thing I would look at is the fuel pump pressure.
I, I did check the pressure, and the pressure was good.
Oh, the pressure is good.
Okay, that's
all right.
Bad.
Well, and this has one coil pack that serves all six cylinders.
This does have a ignition module.
Right, but
it does have a distributor.
Right. It's possible that the problem is in the module or in the coil, and a weak coil will cause this. Have you swapped out the coils?
The guy who had it before me swapped the module.
The coil may be inside the distributor.
Yeah, he did not swap that, as far as I know.
Well, you can take one out of one of the other cars and put it in this one.
Mm-hmm. So right now you have no cars that really run.
True.
Right. So you got nothing to lose, but embedded in those three cars are enough parts to get one of them to run.
Yeah,
maybe.
But you got to keep track of what you move from where to where.
Yeah, but so
yeah,
I would label the cars 1, 2, and 3. And when you take the coil out of car number 2 to put it in number 1, make sure you make a note of that and start with the coil and let us know. Give us a call next week.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're going to be here for the rest of the hour. Call us back in 20 minutes.
Yeah. There you go.
You can change the coil in half an hour.
Call us as soon as you know something. We can't wait. See you, Bill.
All right, thanks.
Thanks for your call.
Good
Bye
luck.
888-CAR-TALK. He's going to junk all three of them. 888-CAR-TALK. It'll be a triumphant day when he gets one of them to run.
Oh, yeah. And you got to keep track of what you're doing because...
I don't think so. It'll be more fun if he doesn't.
Have to start all over again.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Alethea O'Toole, and I'm from Hilo, Hawaii.
Alethea?
Alethea, yeah.
E-L-E-T-H-I-A?
A-L-E-T-H-E-A.
Alethea, okay.
Alethea.
From Hawaii.
Yes.
Wow. Where in Hawaii?
Hilo, Hawaii.
Hilo.
On the big island.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have all the volcano, all the lava, all the sulfur.
Yeah.
So, what's up, Alethea?
My husband changed our front brakes on our car, and after he did, the speedometer and the odometer stopped working.
Really?
Yeah.
He changed
the
front brake pads.
Right. But what was interesting about it is we drove a quarter mile, and then they would kick in. Then after a little while, we would drive half a mile, and then it would kick it in. Now the island is 120 miles. Straight across.
Yeah.
Now we have to drive halfway across the island before the odometer will kick in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And when it works normally?
When it works completely normal.
Right. Well, it sounds like you probably have an open circuit in your vehicle speed sensor. What kind of a car is this?
It's a Nissan Sentra. It's a 1996.
Okay, 1996. It has a sensor, I believe. And that sensor tells the computer and the odometer and speedometer how fast the axles are turning.
Yeah, but how could he have damaged that?
Oh, he didn't
do
anything.
Yeah, I don't think there's
much as we'd like to blame him.
We can't because the brakes are down below.
Right.
And these things are up above.
No, and if he had knocked the wire off the sensor, it would never recover.
Oh, no, it wouldn't recover.
Right.
No, so he's completely blameless.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
And what is interesting is shortly after that, too, we had a brake pedal issue.
Oh.
There's a little tiny plastic sensor underneath the brake, and our brake lights were staying on.
Yeah.
Oh.
When we would turn off the car, and we found out that it was just this little tiny plastic.
Yeah.
Well, you know, just to be on the safe side, I'd keep him away from the car from now on. I mean, you never know. I mean, I don't think he's caused either one of these things. I mean, I don't see how he could have affected the brake light switch either.
He may just have bad karma.
No.
Yeah. I don't think
he did not do
so the vehicle speed sensor is actually attached to the transmission, which is quite a ways away from the two front brake systems.
Okay.
But I assume that at some point very soon your check engine light's going to come on.
Yes.
Is it on?
Yes. And my airbag light is blinking at me, too. I'm afraid that thing is going to implode one day.
Oh, he must have done that, too. I would blame him for everything.
No, he did not do this.
He did not do this.
No, he did not.
Yeah.
The airbag light being on is something you should attend to because that means that if you have a crash, the airbags are not going to go off.
Oh, okay.
That's an important thing to know because the system is now shut down until you get it fixed and get that light reset. So you've got to get that fixed.
Okay.
Is there a Nissan dealer in Hilo?
There is.
Oh, there is. Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, take it over there. Have them put the scan tool on it. They'll find out that your vehicle speed sensor is bad. They'll change that. They'll find out what's wrong with your airbag. They'll reset the light if there's nothing wrong. They'll fix the brakes that he screwed up, and you'll be all ready to go.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah, and keep him away from the car, just to be on the safe side. Thanks for your call. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, all right. Look, it's time for us to take a little break before we give Alt the answer to last week's puzzle.
Hey, before you get to that, I have a letter I want to read.
Oh, really?
It's actually a letter addressed to you, but I opened it because I always read your mail.
Right.
Check this out. It says, Dear Ray, I've listened to your radio program for a number of years now, and I have never known Tommy to remember a previous week's puzzler. What an idiot, I thought.
Well, you're right so far.
Well, now with the miracle, or perhaps curse, of podcasts, I'm now able to listen to back-to-back episodes of Car Talk. Unfortunately, last week, I discovered that even with only a one-hour gap, I was unable to remember last week's puzzler, or in this case, the last hour's puzzler.
Really?
From this, I have figured out Tommy's problem. Obviously, overexposure to Car Talk causes degradation of mental faculties.
There you go!
But here's my question, he says. If I stop now, is it reversible, or am I doomed already? Dickie Cluth, Pittsfield, Massachusetts. You're done for, Dickie.
Well, who knows? I mean, maybe it's not too late.
Well, it's too late for me.
Well, yeah, it got late early for you. I'm sure you don't remember last week's puzzler, do you?
No, but neither does my pal Dickie, and I feel better about it now.
Anyway, it was about something that every modern car has, but only in certain numbers, and we'll be back with the details, of course, and more of your car questions in just a minute.
Yeah, so please stay tuned.
I got too many cars in my yard, but none of them will go too far. I got some on blocks, some for parts. I got too many cars in my yard.
And even though earwax sufferers pause before putting their drops in whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio. Hey, if you find yourself thinking, you know, this show gets worse every time I hear it, why not check out some classic shows from our archives, like when we used to be good?
When was that?
It's just a figure of speech, you know?
You can download any show from the Car Talk archives at cartalk.com. Just click where it says, listen to the show.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and of course the answer to last week's puzzler. Mm. And this was an automotive puzzler sent in by a fellow named John LaCara, who gave me full obfuscatory license, even though I really didn't use it. I mean, he said, do anything you want, but I didn't really mess around with it that much. It was so well designed.
Really?
Yes, and so well stated.
I wish I could remember.
Well, it went something like this.
Yeah.
Most of the cars currently produced for sale in the United States have one of these. Some cars have two. I don't know any that have three. At least I've never seen a car that came from the factory with three. A few have four, and none have more. And the question is, what are these?
I got it. Tires. No.
No, we're not talking about your MG. Okay. No, I could have given a hint that it wasn't particularly automotive. We're not looking for some esoteric part. And there may be, you know, some transmission part that I'm speaking about that could satisfy these criteria. But I'm talking about something that we all notice when we stop behind another car. That is the number of tailpipes. Most cars have one tailpipe. Yeah. Some cars have two tailpipes. I don't think I've ever seen one with three.
And four.
And some cars, like, you know, the BMW X5, have
two
four.
And two, which is four.
Exactly. But I've never seen one with more. I'm sure there's one out there, and we'll hear about it. But until then, do we have a winner?
Yeah, we do. The winner this week is Ann Shane from Kalamazoo, Michigan, and for having her answer selected at random from among the pile of correct answers that we got, Ann is going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at cartalk.com, with which she can get our new 4-CD set called Field Guide to the North American Wacko.
Right, and among the callers we hear from in this collection is Dave, who somehow discovered that his keyless remote worked much better if he pointed it directly at his chin.
Oh, really?
Yes, and I believe I came up with the explanation that his chin was dispersing the beam.
To which I believe I replied, disperse this, will you?
You did. That's exactly what you said. Now, if you weren't today's winner, take heart, because we have a new puzzler coming up in the third half of the show. In the meantime, you can ask us the questions by calling it 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Nancy from Albany, California.
Hi, Nancy. Hi. Where's Albany, California?
Well, I thought you'd ask.
Yes.
If you're in the San Francisco area, and you go out into the middle of the Golden Gate Bridge and look east.
Oh, I thought you were going to say and jump.
No, you look east, and there's Albany.
Ah.
So we're right next to Berkeley.
Yeah.
Yeah, now we got a call recently from your same town, and somebody insisted it was pronounced Albany.
No. No, it's Albany.
It's Albany.
It's named after the first mayor was from Albany, New York. So they named.
Oh, well.
Really? Oh, that other guy was a phony.
Yeah.
He was probably the current mayor. Anyway, what's going on, Nancy?
Okay, I have a 96 Subaru Legacy.
Uh-huh.
And it has a problem going downhill.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay, so it's when you put on the brakes and you're going downhill, it makes this horrible screeching noise.
Yeah.
And my daughter, who lives in San Francisco, wants to borrow the car for the summer.
Oh, forget it.
Of course, there's lots of downhills in San Francisco, so we're worried about giving it to her. What should we do?
How long is this hill?
Actually, the first time we heard it, we were in a parking garage.
Right.
And so we were just, you know, going down the little ramps.
Yeah.
Right.
And it just was this horrible screeching.
Well, sounds like a cat getting run over.
Yeah.
It comes when you are applying... I would say a small amount of pressure to the brake pedal. Is that true?
True.
Uh-huh. True. And if you were to apply more pressure to the pedal...
The noise would go away.
No.
Is that true?
No.
No? Oh, that's too bad.
It keeps on going. So what we did, because we were trying to get out of a parking garage, there were a lot of people, so we just put on the parking brake so the noise would stop.
Oh, so you used the parking brake to slow your descent.
Yeah.
Let me get this
and
right.
And it didn't make the noise.
No, not with the parking brake.
So clearly it's the front brakes making the noise because the parking brake is in the back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it sounds to me like a classic case. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Brake noise.
Okay.
Oh, good name.
It's a good thing, okay.
Well, you know, some names just lend themselves.
Jump out at you.
To, you know, you don't have to explain beyond.
That's a good one. I like it.
Here's what you need to do. Someone's going to look at the brakes, first of all, to make sure that all the hardware is there that keeps the pads from moving. What causes brake noise is that the pad is moving in the bracket and is moving against either the piston, or the backside of the caliper, and that's setting up the noise. And there are various lubricants that can be applied to the backside of the brake pads to make that...
To make the noise go away.
To make that noise go away. So even though the piece is moving... It isn't setting up, it's like if you were dragging a piece of, if you had a nail and were rubbing it across another piece of metal, you would get this same kind of noise, a screechy kind of noise.
Right.
And that's what's happening when the metal backing of the pad is hitting the metal of the caliper bracket or the metal piston of the caliper.
Okay, because we had the brakes checked like 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And they said there was 5 millimeters on the pad.
Well, it's time to replace them.
And when you had the brakes checked, was it making noise then?
No, not at all.
Yeah, five.
Oh, and it got worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we've only driven it about 500 miles.
Well, five millimeters is like 3/16 of an inch, you know. So you're getting real close to needing new pads.
Okay.
Tell them you want new pads and new rotors, and tell them about the problem you have, and make sure that they all the hardware's on there. There's not much on Subarus.
Okay.
It's a pretty simple job.
And so they should check the hardware to make sure. It's
yeah. But tell them
to check it for the noise.
Yeah. Tell them you had this problem, and it's the first thing you're going to do when you leave there is go to that parking garage.
Okay.
And if it's making noise, you're coming right back.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Good luck, Nancy.
All right. Thanks a lot.
See ya. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
888 Car Talk. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Jep.
Jep.
Yes.
J-E-P?
J-E-P, exactly.
It's going to be a shortened form of...
John Paul, a lifelong nickname.
Oh, John Paul.
Paul, Jep.
Jep, I like it.
Great.
Where are you from, Jep?
Calling from St. Paul's Cathedral in Boston.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
We've been there.
Yeah, great.
They threw us out once for being obstreperous, but we did visit once. Anyway, Jep, what's going on?
I've got a 96 Corolla with 200,000 miles, and I took it to a new mechanic for tuning. He told me it needed a new timing belt, which he replaced.
Uh-huh.
2 days later, the car died. Turned over, wouldn't start.
Uh-huh.
I towed it back, and he told me the camshaft had broken, which I'd never heard of. And then he replaced it, and he said it was just pure coincidence that what he did had nothing to do with the camshaft being broken. So he replaced it for free because he said there's no way in the world
you would ever believe the
story.
I would
never believe that it was a coincidence.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether this guy's a saint or a sinner.
Well, you're in the right environment there to maybe
figure it out.
What do you do at the church, Jep?
I'm the dean of the cathedral.
The dean.
Well, it's the guy in charge of it. I'm an Episcopal priest, and I'm the go-to guy.
Oh, yeah. You're the go-to guy.
He's the guy that says, and stay out.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think I met you once.
That's right.
Yeah. So here's the question. I'll tell you, it's very, very unusual for a camshaft to break.
Right,
What's more typical is that the timing belt jumped.
Uh-huh.
And that rendered the car unstartable.
Yeah.
And that's easy to do. How would I know that? Because I've done it. So it's easy enough to put the timing belt on incorrectly. If you don't put the tension on the right way, only one side of the belt gets tensioned. If the other side of the belt is not taut when the tensioner is released, uh-huh, then the belt can jump. And if it jumps one tooth, it begins to run rough. If it jumps a bunch of teeth, it won't start. And usually when the jumping occurs when you're trying to start the engine.
Right.
So the belt that's barely on correctly and maybe has jumped one tooth during its running may have run a little bit ragged, and all of a sudden you shut the thing off and you try to start it the next morning,
right,
and it'll just crank and crank and it won't start.
Yeah.
Because everything's in the wrong place.
Right. So when the timing belt jumps, the valves are opening when they shouldn't be.
Right.
And the spark is firing when it shouldn't
be.
Everything's all screwed up. So the chances that he did that happened coincidentally, are about, I would say, 1 in 1,000.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it's more likely that he screwed up.
But he didn't feel that he could charge you, but he had to have a good story, maybe.
That's right.
So the good story is something broke, but I'm such a wonderful person.
Right.
That I fixed it for free.
Right. And also, I had to pay $165 to have the car towed.
Oh.
And he said, the camshaft replacement is $800. I'll cover that if you cover the car towing.
Oh, okay, sure. All right, so it definitely sounds like a story.
I think we're tilting toward the sinner end, not
I
the
think,
saint.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, but, I mean, he certainly did well by you.
Yeah.
No, does he know you're a clergyman?
I work.
Because you don't mess with those guys. We learned that a long time ago.
That's right.
Those guys have connections.
Right.
You use guys.
That's it.
You guys have connections that we wouldn't mess with you.
Yeah, and he didn't want to mess with you.
This could come back, right.
And it was nice of him.
Well, it was nice of him, except you got stuck for... He made a mistake.
Right.
And you got stuck for $165 towing. If he had admitted to you that he put the belt on in such a manner that allowed it to jump...
Then he should have paid for that anyway.
He should have paid the $165.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's up to you, Jep, to decide what to do with him. You can go to him and say... Look, Joe. Is that his name?
We'll say his name is Joe.
Let's say his name is Joe.
I'm going to pray for your soul here, but you've got to tell me the truth. And the truth is that you put the belt on incorrectly, or someone who works for you did.
Right.
And now you don't want to pay the $165 towing, but you probably should. And the easiest way for him to deal with this is to make it up to you in trade. He'll give you 4 or 5 free oil changes.
Uh-huh.
And when you tell him you called us and we told you the truth.
That's it.
Then he'll say, okay, you caught me.
Right.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he probably knows where our shop is. He'll be coming
around in the morning. That's right.
Well, good luck, but I think you need to tell him that he didn't have to make up a story.
Uh-huh.
That the truth shall set you free.
That's it.
Yeah.
You're sounding good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, if you ever need someone on Sunday to fill in.
I was going
to
say, if this mechanic thing doesn't work out, I've got a place for you.
Jep, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Great. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Just a priest is calling us with an ethical question. What does the world come to, right?
The end of the world can't be far behind.
It can't be far behind, exactly right. See
Great.
You, Jeff. Good luck.
Okay, bye-bye.
We'll stop in and see him any day.
Yeah, we just stop in at St. Paul's, sure.
Sure. I mean, I go in there.
They won't let you in, but I'll go. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Courtney. I'm calling from Los Angeles.
Hi, Courtney.
Courtney.
You doing the dishes?
Yes. Yes.
Well, it had that familiar ring to it.
Yeah.
So what's going on, Courtney?
Well, I drive a 2004 RAV4. Uh-huh. And for the past couple months now, when I'm driving and I'm going like between 25 and 35 miles an hour, I will put my foot on the, you know, on the gas, and I take my foot off and I coast for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
When I put my foot back on the gas, it makes this like grinding noise. It makes this noise. It's like,
ooh,
yeah,
really.
Any idea where that noise is coming from?
It sounds like it's coming from underneath the car, like in the front.
Yeah. It doesn't affect the way the vehicle performs at all, I'm sure. In other words, even in the midst of this awful noise,
the car just takes off.
It accelerates as well as it does.
Right.
Okay, yeah. It's just a noise.
So the noise is just a noise.
Yeah, it's just a noise.
Okay, and it happens, so give us...
Only 25 to 35 miles an hour.
So you're coasting at that speed, and then you try to accelerate, and that's when you get the noise.
Right.
Is that the noise?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's the exact noise.
I was just clearing my throat. Now, I think you have a loose piece of sheet metal someplace, and you probably heard this answer before, and the reason we use it so often...
is because it happens very often.
Exactly, and you have a loose heat shield. And the heat shields are pieces of sheet metal that are that either wrap around your exhaust system and are also attached to the underbody of the car, all along the exhaust system, between the exhaust manifold all the way back to the muffler.
Because the exhaust system gets hot, and the shield is to keep the heat from coming back up into the vehicle.
Right, and the reason they put these on is that people's pocketbooks were catching fire. You know, you put your pocketbook on the floor, and next thing you know, the thing starts smoldering, your lipstick is melted, and you don't know what the hell happened. You know, so they put the heat shield there to keep the heat out of the passenger compartment. And when one of them comes loose, it's because it's such a flimsy piece of metal, it'll make an awful rattling and very annoying sound. And your vehicle is just about the right age to have a loose heat shield.
And it'll be relatively easy to find, but you're going to have to bring it to the mechanic because he's going to put it up on the lift and he's going to mess around and he'll see it. He'll find it right away.
What we do is we put an assistant up on the lift, not the customer, one of our guys, and we try to find the right engine RPM where we can reproduce it. So if you go in like 100 RPM increments with the gas pedal, even with the thing in neutral, you'll finally get to that one point where you hear a little zzzz.
And if you're underneath the vehicle, you can find it because you can hear it much better.
Right, and it all works out great unless the vehicle falls on you, in which case...
and my brother has done that a few times, too.
Yeah, I've done that.
Yeah. We found the noise, and your car has been destroyed.
But anyway, that's what it is. It doesn't sound too serious.
Okay.
Do you have a mechanic that you like and maybe trust?
No.
Well,
I just moved here, so I need to find someone.
Oh, so you need to go to our mechanics files on our website, cartalk.com, and you will find a plethora of competent mechanics in the L.A. area, or at least one.
Okay.
And this shop has been recommended by listeners of Car Talk. And you can find out what they think about this place, and you can then go visit and see if you like the shop.
Okay.
And then you'll have formed a bond for life.
Yeah.
Right?
Awesome. But you can't wait.
I can't. I'm so glad I can do it right now.
See you, Courtney. Thanks for your call. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Bye.
All right. It's time for us to take a real quick break here.
Well, that's not very nice.
What? You mean interrupting the show is not very nice?
No. I mean offering our listeners a break from us and then making it real quick. I mean, don't you think they deserve more than a minute?
Well, maybe, but that's all they're getting is a minute. And look, when we come back, I'm going to have a new puzzler. And this one is from my Dining and Dancing series.
Okay. We'll have the new puzzler and more of your car questions in just a minute. Make the most of it.
Driving along west on 90 east under my back, and see ahead breaking away, never going back, shifting a fold and streaming on.
Run from the sun, run from the sun, drive me away. Tomorrow I will come, it's not where we go, the fear we leave behind. Strap yourself in and drive me away.
And even though Scott Simon makes a note to start working on his unicycle act again whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.
Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and of course, what? The new Puzzler.
Yeah.
And this was sent in by a fellow named Darren Wind. And I took some liberties in obfuscating it. And,
oh, really?
And just a few.
What a shock that is.
Are you ready? Pay attention.
Yeah, yeah.
Pay attention.
Yeah.
You're not paying attention. The other day, I was talking to my wife on the phone while we were both at work, and we decided to go to our favorite restaurant for dinner. As usual, at the end of my workday, I drove to her office and waited in the parking lot for a few minutes for her to show up. When she did, we made the drive to the restaurant together. By the time that we got there, the parking lot was pretty full, but we got lucky and found the spot almost immediately. Once inside, we chatted for a few minutes with the hostess, who turned out to be a high school friend of our daughter. And since we were both pretty hungry, we quickly looked at the menu and ordered our food. We waited for what seemed to be an eternity, although it was probably about 20 minutes or half an hour, and finally our food arrived. Well, after we paid the bill and said goodnight to our daughter's friend, we drove home. On the way home, I mentioned how hungry I was. We both agreed that we were actually more hungry now than when we first made the drive to the restaurant. Nonetheless, we were both satisfied with our decision to get dinner at that restaurant. Hmm. How could that be? Did you pay attention?
I'm confused.
want me to do it again?
No,
I'll
got
do it.
It
all over again.
No, I understand it. I understand.
If you think you know the answer, write it on the underside of a Grandee 500-gallon portable spa with 7-passenger capacity, multicolored LED lighting system, surround sound audio, 36 directional precision jets, Bella Fontana arcing water feature, and a 55-gallon drum of prophylactic Beano for my brother. And send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge,
Our Fair City,
Matt02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
But right now, if you have a question for us, we're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Ashley.
Hi, Ashley. Where are you from?
Portland, Oregon.
Portland, Oregon.
Portland, Oregon.
What's up?
I have a 2002 Ford Explorer with about 80,000 miles on it, and I had the brakes and rotors replaced about a year ago, and now when I'm braking, it feels like someone took off the front tires and put eggs on there. And what I mean by that is that it kind of rolls funny, like it rolls faster and then slower and then faster and then slower when I'm putting on the brakes.
Oh, especially when you're going very slowly?
Yes, very slowly. That's what happens the most.
So you feel like lurching.
Yeah, but there's no sound associated with it. It's just a weird kind of, you know, rolling motion.
But you can feel in your foot that the brake seems
feel it in the
to be...
And all the passengers in the car can feel it, too.
Yeah.
Have any of them puked?
No, not yet.
You can feel that the brake seems to be applying the brake and then not applying the brake. Is that what you feel?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, it sounds like you have warped discs.
It certainly does.
Okay, and would that have anything to do with the fact that I had them replaced?
Well,
about a year ago, or?
It might have to do with a lot of things. I'm also guessing that at high speed, if you step on the brake, say at 30 or 40 miles an hour or higher, that you feel a shudder in the vehicle and maybe a rapid pulsing in the brake pedal.
Yes.
You do.
Yeah, because one of your front, we're assuming one of the front discs or both of them maybe are warped. Do you also feel it in your steering wheel?
Not so much in the steering wheel. The reason why we had the rotors and the brakes replaced a year ago is because when we were turning really sharply, it was making funny noises.
Yeah. So the place that did this, did they give you a warranty?
you know, they might have given us a warranty for a year, but we might have just passed it last week.
Well, if you're a week away, I think you should go back to them and say, look,
okay,
I think the discs you put on are warped. And maybe they'll replace them for free. I'm guessing the pads are fine. The pads aren't worn out. But you could have, and they'll tell you this perhaps, a stuck brake caliper. And if one of the brake calipers is sticking on, it can overheat one of those discs enough to warp it. And if that were the case, it would cause the pulsation you have.
And how long has this been going on?
Probably about 3 months or so.
Hmm. 3 months. Do you feel that you're in danger driving this car? Or
I don't like to drive the car that much anyways because it's so big. And I do feel like maybe sometimes I'll just put on the brake and it just won't stop.
Well, you have to get it looked at because no matter what speed you're stopping from, your stopping distance is now increased.
Yeah.
You may not realize it, but it's taking you a greater distance to stop from a given speed than it should.
So don't just forget about it. Get it looked at tomorrow.
Yeah, take it to these guys.
Today.
Yesterday. Go yesterday and tell them, look, I may be a week or two over the warranty period, but I'd like you to take a look at this thing and hopefully honor the warranty because I'm such a good customer.
Okay.
Are you a regular customer at this shop?
I am a new customer, but my father has taken many cars there.
Oh, so they know your dad.
You're all set.
Yes.
Yeah, bring him with you.
Okay.
Just have him. He can snooze. Just put him in the front seat. See you, Ashley.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, guys, this is Van Fletcher calling from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Hi, Van.
No last names, please.
What's going on? From Raleigh, huh?
From Raleigh.
Raleigh. Like the bicycle.
That's right.
That's right.
Even though I don't see him around here, that's the same spelling.
I have an English Raleigh.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
You didn't say?
Yes, I do. anyway, Van, what's going on?
Well, I've got a 97 Honda Accord that we bought back in 2000, and about ever since, well, really about the time we bought it, anytime we go over a speed bump in it, it sounds like a gnome clearing its throat under my car. Or
a what?
A gnome.
You mean a gnome?
A gnome, yeah.
That's right. So it kind of sounds like that. It's like walking on crunchy snow. It's like when I go over a speed bump. And I'm trying to figure out where, I mean, I think it's coming from the shocks, but I don't know. And I thought,
can I
solve it just shooting some oil up in it?
Or, well, it's coming from your suspension.
Okay.
Because when you go over speed bumps, you're asking the wheels, which are attached to the suspension, to move a greater amount than they normally move.
Huh.
You know, so when you go over speed bumps, you the first two wheels that hit the speed bump move up quite well. They move up the distance of the speed bump, the height of the speed bump. If it's 8 inches, you know that they're going to move up 8 inches. So it means that the suspension bushings are going to have to rotate enough to allow that amount of movement.
Okay.
Okay. And especially if you're going over a little bit too fast.
Well, my wife doesn't, but I probably do on occasion.
Right. So she's not hearing it. And that's why she didn't call us today.
That's right.
You know, but you're hearing the noise because you're going over a little bit too fast, and you're not giving. If you went over very, very slowly, then in fact the suspension wouldn't move very much at all.
It is relatively simple to check to see if anything's wrong.
How do you do that?
Well, you can't do it, but you take it someplace.
You take it to a shop, and they'll have it figured out in 2 minutes.
Is it a matter of them just squirting oil up in there?
It might be. I mean, you might be able to reproduce the noise yourself by pushing on the bumper or the fender, you know, each corner, one at a time.
If you push down heavily on the fender, if you weigh 200 pounds, you will do exactly what is happening when you go over a speed bump.
That sounds pretty easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then if you can isolate where the noise is, there are lubricants that you can put in there. That will get into that bushing and make the noise go away, at least temporarily. And
we
have some that work better than others, but there are lots of things in the market.
Okay, terrific.
Yeah, but it's not a bad idea to have somebody check it out just to make sure that the wheels aren't going to fall off. I mean, it is, after all, an 11-year-old car.
This is true.
And, you know, who knows what could be wrong with it, but it sounds to me like it's just the bushings. And some cars are more susceptible to it than others.
Yeah, it might be just that, but it might be that you have not replaced these things for 1,000 years and it's time.
And it's time.
Yeah.
Well, and if that's the case, then, you know, I'll be calling you back about how to do it myself.
All right.
Yeah, and you can do it.
Good luck, man.
Thanks, guys.
All right, see ya.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK, that's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Mara. I'm calling from Poland, New York.
Mara, M-A-R-A?
It is indeed, yes.
Where's Poland, New York?
It's near Utica, New York.
Oh, yeah.
It's where they make Saranac beer.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yes, the drums along the Hudson or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Mohawk.
So what's up?
So, I have one of those proverbial husband and wife disagreements.
Oh, I know.
Look, I'm
going to
go out for a sandwich. I'll have you and my brother talk, Mara.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, from my house, there are two ways to get to the top of this hill.
Yeah.
One is straight up. And my husband says it's about a 60-degree angle going up.
No, there's not the 60. Mount Everest isn't 60 degrees.
Okay.
Maybe six.
All right,
six,
it's probably,
okay.
All right, it's a steep hill.
It's a steep hill.
I mean, can Billy Goats make it up this hill?
Barely.
Barely, okay. So it's probably 20 degrees, but that's
okay.
Steep.
And then there's this back way that's sort of windy.
Yeah.
And, you know, you go up and down a hill, but it's exactly 3.1 miles each way. I measured it.
Yeah. I'm going to guess. Your husband says the best way to do it is go right up the steep hill.
He actually says it doesn't matter that you use the same amount of gas whether you go up this steep hill or you take this back way because you end up at the same elevation.
Is he an engineer?
No.
What
good.
Is he? That's hairdresser? Good. Is he a hairdresser?
No.
There's no general rule about this.
Well,
okay.
I mean, the amount of work being done, if you were a mule,
yeah,
okay, or any if you were carrying a jug of water up this hill,
uh-huh.
The amount of work to get it to the top is exactly the same whether you go straight up or take the circuitous route.
Okay.
Because the elevation is the same, you know.
But he's talking about how much gasoline you would use.
Yes, how much gasoline you
would
use.
Well, right. I think you might use the same amount.
You might, but there's no general rule about it.
Yeah.
Because the more circuitous route could be miles.
Even in three. So how far is it if you go straight up at the 60-degree angle?
It's actually from my home up to the top of the hill where you end up at the same place. It's exactly 3.1 miles.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's the short route.
And no, they're exactly the same.
They're both 3.1 miles?
It is indeed, yes.
I don't understand how they can both be the same distance.
It's old Amish country. I don't.
But the circuitous route, what's the steepest that you have to, if you take the back road?
I was looking at it this morning. It was just a little hill up. Nothing huge at all.
You're describing a topographical impossibility.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense.
Because if that were the case, when they climbed Mount Everest, they would have taken the back road.
Yeah. And then they got there at the same time.
I mean, and they would have been waiting for those other bozos that are killing themselves with the Sherpa guides and all that. We're here already.
Yeah. No, we don't get it.
I think that you do end up going up the hill a lot more. It just doesn't seem like it's not the same grade. So it doesn't seem, it's like one of those where you're like going, you know, I'm making hand motions that you can't see.
No, we can.
And it's 3.1 miles no matter which route you take.
Yes. I measured them because I thought I was crazy. I measured them twice.
Well, you are crazy.
So the back road isn't very steep at all.
No, it's not. But
it's
you
not.
End up at the same.
But clearly you're climbing to get there because
yes.
If you weren't climbing, you what?
You wouldn't,
get to the top.
You wouldn't get there.
Yeah. Well, we're still looking at each other here, trying to decide if you're a wackadoo or not, but the jury's still out.
But it's been nice.
My husband will say that you're exactly correct about that. You're nuts.
Boy.
Hmm.
So he's checked his odometer to go from the house to the top of this hill is 3.1 miles of grunting and straining for the car.
Yes.
And you take a leisurely, also 3.1-mile jaunt where you stop and pick some tulips along the way and you smell the roses. And next thing you know, voila, you're at the top of the hill.
Exactly.
And you've gone 3.1 miles.
Uh-huh.
You're nuts.
Yeah. Well, if that's the case, I would go your way.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But if you go one way in one car and he goes the other way in another car, are you going to get to the top at the same time?
We do. We get to the top. top at the same time.
It doesn't make any difference whether this is a cordless route. At some point, you've got to climb the hill. You've got to get there. At some point, it's going to get steep enough for long enough so that it gets you to the top, unless you're winding up on a different hill.
No! So I have to go home and tell him he's right?
No, don't do that because the guys with the white coats will be there in the morning to get you. Don't tell him he's right. He's already convinced you're a nut, and this may put him over the edge. Tell him you couldn't get through.
It never happened.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. Just pretend we never spoke. And just,
okay.
Tell him I tried like hell. I couldn't get through. We had a bad connection. And just drop the whole thing.
Yeah.
And if we're ever in Utica, we're gonna look you up. You can count
Give
on
that.
It. And keep away from those hills. I think the high altitude is getting to you. But it's been a
it
pleasure.
Might be that Poland air.
It must be. It's been a wonderful pleasure speaking to you, Mara.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye bye.
Okay, bye bye.
Whew.
Well, you've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are Louis Cronin the Barbarian and David Gibraltar Green. Our senior web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the St. Moritz Lemon Spritz, Mini Ritz, Bacon Bits, Buttered Grits, Cheese Biscuits, Olive Pits, Wiener Schnitz, Bottle Schlitz, Banana Splits, and Slivel Vits. Stuff your mitts with all that fits is John Bugsy Lawler.
Wow.
Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Marge Navera. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our second shift meteorologist is Cloudy Overnight. Our physical therapist is Estelle Hoyts. Our staff naturalist is Deirdre Oppings. Our food taster is Howard M. Burgers. Tommy's personal psychiatrist is Mandy Luce Cruz. Our bail bondswoman is Frida Wander. Tommy's ex-house cleaner is Stu Grody. Our luncheon chef is Hannah Mia Canatuna. Our optometric firm is CFI Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the pouting second-choice commencement speakers in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. Remember this, don't drive like my brother.
And don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. CDs of this show, which is number 822, along with Car Talk clothing, CDs, and other Car Talk gifts, are available at 888-CAR-JUNK or by going to the Shameless Commerce Division of our website, cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, we're launching a Click and Clack lookalike contest.
You know, people often tell me I look a lot like George Clooney.
You?
Sure, George Clooney's 20 years older, a foot shorter, and 30 pounds fatter, and without any hair.
Well, that's interesting. Who would you say I look like?
Well, imagine Fidel Castro sticking his finger in an electric socket.
All right. I mean, we're clearly going to need our listeners to chime in here.
Yeah, we'll post our photos online, and you can post actual photos of, like, friends, family, inmates, or neighborhood hobos who you think look like one of us.
That's the Click and Clack Lookalike Contest. This might not be pretty.
Oh, no, it
won't
be. That's
this week at CarTalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though Schrodinger's cat asks if he can stay in his box whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.